Oh, it looks like we got Connor. Without any other further ado, let me turn it over to him. Let me see if I can bring him in. Connor, are you there?
I am, Jake. How are you?
I'm doing super duper. I'm actually going to turn it over to you for a second as I tend to some business here for a minute, but you wanted to talk to 9/11 as well. It's all yours. The floor is yours, Connor.
Okay. Well, I mean, how can you not on a day like this, right? You know, it's the 11th anniversary of the attack on the World Trade Center. Everyone's thinking about it. Everyone's talking about it. But as is the case with so many current events, it seems like the conversation is always so superficial and laden with emotional rhetoric, and understandably so, right? Thousands of people died on that day. We certainly should be sympathetic to the families of those who lost loved ones and remember the suffering and sacrifice that happened that day. So by no means what I want to talk about, what you've been talking about on your show, is meant to diminish that in any way, but it's kind of interesting that the federal government has turned this into Patriots Day, and many people now put up flags. And I kind of bristle at the labeling of the anniversary of 9/11 as Patriots Day, because I don't think patriotism really had anything to do with what happened that day. Yes, there were heroes. Yes, there were sacrifices and these brave firefighters going in and saving people and minimizing whatever damage they could. There were truly heroes that day, some really compelling stories. I don't think it was a day about patriotism, but nonetheless, people have deemed it this day to be Patriots Day. And for me, I love the quote that has been, I think, attributed to a few authors, but that says, a patriot is one who defends his country from the government, that the government is entrenching itself and increasing power, and it is the country, society, the free, voluntary interactions of the brotherhood of mankind that needs to be defended against the state. And so, yes, sure, it's Patriots Day. Let's defend our country against our government. And for that reason, I wanted to kind of go through a little bit today and analyze some of what has been done in the name of our country by the government since and because of 9/11. So in the name of 9/11 and using the fear-mongering, what has been done? I especially recall the 2004 Republican National Convention, for example. And there's a funny video clip that you can pull up on YouTube about this that it compiles all of the fear-mongering tactics that were used by the speakers throughout the convention that referenced words like fear and terror and death. And, I mean, they just got like several minutes of these tiny little clips that they were able to string together because of the just bleeding fear-mongering that was going on to justify so many of these policies, the aggrandizement of war, the inflation of the military-industrial complex in the wake of 9/11. I'm especially reminded so often of the counsel given by Jesus Christ. Believe in him or not, what have you, I think the idea itself is quite sound when he says that by your fruits you shall know them. He's talking about all these different people are claiming to be things that they were not. He's saying forget their words, forget their rhetoric, forget the labels. By their fruits you shall know them. So the question that's incumbent upon us to discuss and answer, I think, is what are the fruits of 9/11? Yes, there was tragedy. Yes, there was loss. Yes, there was sacrifice on that single day. But what has been done since, right, by the government in our name, in our collective name as a country, representing us, supposedly protecting us, what has been done? And that, I think, is where we find the most compelling stories to address how immoral basically, I think we've violated so much of what people claim is important. By that I mean people say we have to remember the people who died and honor their sacrifice and such and such. I think we do a disservice and a dishonor by not having frank and open and honest discussion about what has been done in their name, in our name, in the years since. You look at how many countries we're in. You look at the escalation of war, a decade, if not more now, of warfare that has gone on. The proliferation of new enemies by bombing innocent people and enraging, fathers and husbands and friends trying to avenge the loss of their innocent friend who was killed at our hand. You know, how many people died on 9/11? I think it was like, 3,000, give or take. And how many people have died since, right? We're talking at least hundreds of thousands, if not in the 1 million to 2 million range. The data is quite muddy because it's hard to enumerate all the people who just live in these valleys and caves and what have you in the Middle East. But even the most conservative estimates are kind of, maybe 200,000, 300,000 people have died as a result of the United States government as well as its allies that we dragged in many cases and pressured into following our lead in these wars. So if 3,000 people died, does it make any sense from a policy perspective to, what, sevenfold, tenfold, escalate the number of deaths involved, supposedly to retaliate and prevent another atrocity from happening? I really think that just from a numbers perspective, leaving aside everything else, that just doesn't even make sense. And I think that those numbers in my research are quite far off. Of course, you know, these data analysts want to be able to point to specific, accurate data to bolster the legitimacy of their report. But I think there are some really compelling arguments to make for that we're past the million mark in the innocent people who have been killed, let alone the hundreds of thousands of people who have suffered through sanctions and related actions that are not, you know, we haven't dropped a bomb on them, but the invasion that we've done, the occupation that we've done, the sanctions that we did beforehand were definitely a factor in harm, if not ultimate death. And so if 3,000 people died on 9/11, does it make any sense that we could justify in any way, even if the retaliation and the invasion was somehow justified, which I believe it is not, does it make any sense to go and kill 7 to 10 times, if not more, people in pursuit of somehow upholding justice for what happened on 9/11, when, of course, those in Iraq and Afghanistan and these other countries had nothing to do with 9/11? So I think from a numbers perspective, we're quite far off, and we need to be able to, you know, the quote of an eye for an eye and the whole world goes blind. I think we're going blind, if only from a numbers of policy perspective. I think that this irrational foreign policy does not make sense. I think we are doing, again, a disservice to those who died by simply causing more innocent people to die. How tragic it was that 3,000 people died, and yes, we feel horrible, but where do you see the outcry of emotionalism for the people who have died at our hand half a world away? Where are the vigils? Where are the patriotic outcries for, you know, you're a horrible person if you don't pause and remember the suffering and the death of these people? Well, yes, you know, those New Yorkers, those Americans, we should remember them, we should honor them. But why do we not see similar arguments being made for the people who we have killed, or I hesitate to say we, who the United States government and its allies have killed? Where is the support to remember their sacrifice and their death? Where is the honor in that? I think one of the most morally bankrupt positions that you can take is to have this nationalist idea that somehow the lives of the people who died in 9/11 in New York are somehow more valuable, whether you're talking religiously in God's eyes or just from a simple, you know, human perspective, that those lives are somehow more valuable than, you know, the 16-year-old who Osama bin Laden sent to his death because of the connection to his dad, this innocent 16-year-old American citizen who was assassinated by a drone without any due process whatsoever. Why is his life not more valuable? Where do you see the people appealing to these emotional arguments to uphold or to encourage support for remembering him and changing policy perhaps because of it? I don't see that at all, and I think that cognitive dissonance really needs to be addressed.
Yeah, and I'm back, Connor. I appreciate that. I was listening. A lot of what you're saying rings true because it reminds me of, I think it was the Nazi Goering, you know, because you were talking about patriotism. And, you know, he has this famous quote about all you have to do is just, rally people and call people who don't support a war effort or some of this nonsense, just call them unpatriotic. And it
tell
works.
People that they're being attacked by an enemy and call everyone who dissents unpatriotic.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it works, unfortunately.
It does. It's been a precise tool that has been repeatedly implemented here in America.
All right. So, look, we're bumping on our commercial. We're in the middle of the Boyack Review. September 11th, 2012. Connor's talking about the aftermath and some of the moral implications. Come on back, guys. Metal Self-Defense Radio, K-Talk, AM 630, Boise, Utah.
The Voice of Utah. AM 630 K-Talk.
K-Talk.com.
Number one for the most live, local, two-way talk.
You say goodbye, I say hello. Hello, hello.
All right, guys, welcome back. Mental Self Defense Radio in the middle of the Boyack Review. It is Tuesday after 2:30. We got Connor Boyack, author, libertarian political theorist. I don't know what to call you exactly, Connor, but you're one heck of an author and you think very clearly about these issues. Talking a bit about 9/11, I've got a guy on the line here who wants to talk. I guess he's got stories from his experience over in Iraq. Are you cool bringing him in? Hold on just a sec. Connor, are you there? Sorry.
I am.
Okay, you cool bringing him in or do you want to wait?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, hold on. Let's bring in John. John, are you there?
Yeah, I am.
Hi, John. Welcome. What did you want to say?
I was in Iraq for 11 months in 2005, and I was with the Air Force F-16 squadron there, and they have AFN, which is Armed Forces News, which, you know, kind of gives the people overseas, you know, a little taste of, you know, back home or whatever. And one night we were sitting there in the office, and a CNN clip came on, and basically the lady said that two F-16s in Iraq dropped two 2,000-pound bombs on a school, killing all the children, killing, you know, all the teachers, just complete devastation. Well, we all kind of looked at each other because we were the only F-16 squadron in the AOR, and we hadn't dropped any bombs for over 2 months. And on top of that, we didn't even have 2,000-pound bombs. We were dropping 500-pounders. And so basically my point is, while I'm not necessarily a truther, I'm not anti-truther, and going off the basis that the government lies to us all the time, using that basis to question the 9/11, you know, theory, I understand that completely. But at the same time, when the government puts out numbers that, you know, that there's millions of people dying and all this other stuff, I don't necessarily think that they're always giving us the true numbers, and with, you know, stories that are fabricated just like that that we all saw, you know, on the TV. It just kind of adds to the whole. You know, I just don't know what the hell anything that the government says is true or false, you know?
Well, John, your perspective is mine exactly. I don't call myself a truther because I think there is a certain kind of accusatory tone. There are certainly data points. I think I think we do need to have an investigation that is a real one, not some nonsense one like the one that John Farmer, who was a part of, criticizes.
Not supported by the government.
Yeah, I think we need to have a real one. And I'm like you 100%. I'm just like, dude, I don't trust the government. They've lied to me a bajillion times. Why should I believe this nonsense? Especially, maybe I'll give you some credence when at least your story's tight. But a story that has a bajillion holes? I mean, I don't know. Anyway, what's your take, Connor?
Well, I think the interesting thing here that I've observed in the decade or so since 9/11 is how much there's distrust of the government by, you know, at least conservatives generally. That, for example, you look at something like inflation. Right, of course, or unemployment is probably even a better one. The government reports these unemployment figures that are horribly and just blatantly manipulated to create more of a favorable outlook of what the government is trying to do. They're reporting like 8.1, 8.3% when it's really in the 15s and 20s. And so people are really having this general distrust of the government, and yet somehow in this kind of general conservative movement, you get something like a 9/11, and you throw out a statement that, you know, the government lied to us, or even something softer that the government has not, you know, been totally forthcoming and truthful with the American people about it, and you have this apoplectic fit, this just visceral, emotional, reactionary backlash against what you're saying, that how dare you question things, you're dishonoring the memory of those who died. I think what we need is a very logical, calm, fair application of that distrust, that general skepticism, which I think is healthy, towards what the government is doing. The caller is right. I think his name was John, that certainly from the mainstream, I mean, he's talking about a CNN clip. Of course they're going to be wrong, right? But what I was referring to earlier with the death tolls and the figures, I did note that there are all sorts of different figures out there. The government has their own. Of course they're going to be minimized because they don't want American people thinking that millions of people have died because of what we're doing. But you have independent journalists, foreign media, boots on the ground, nonprofit organizations who have done all their independent data gathering and analysis and then provide that to people. And we are at least in the hundreds of thousands of people who have died. Now, of course, some of these were bad actors. They were legitimate, if you want to call them terrorists or insurgents or people trying to do us harm. Of course, the argument is that they wouldn't be doing us harm if we weren't there in the first place. But so many of these people, as I mentioned on Morgan Philpott's show last week, and I was subbing, so many of these people are innocent people. We've now so substantively warped the operations of war that, like, the Obama administration recently declared that they are deeming insurgents anyone within the radius of where a bomb would drop of their target. Any male, this was in Yemen specifically, I'm not sure if this policy has been generalized to the other theaters of war, but any male that happens to be in that area is inherently declared an insurgent by the government so that they can report that 7 insurgents died rather than the 1 targeted, quote-unquote, insurgent, and then 6 innocent people. So the legacy, I think, going back to what has happened since 9/11 is we've completely apostatized from any sense of a just theory of war, any sense of trying to legitimately defend the lives, liberty, and property of the American people. We have now become an imperial nation. We are an empire. No matter how you try and wrap your emotional rhetoric around it, that is essentially what we are doing in these foreign countries. That's not to demean the soldiers. They have their patriotic intentions,
but they're being used. The soldiers, from top to bottom, support this foreign policy of libertarianism. This same foreign policy that's Ron Paul, Gary Johnson, that's let's get out of these countries, stop building bridges in other countries, and start building our own. Before, I don't want to leave John on the line too long. Anything else you want to add, John?
Yeah, actually, I had one quick comment. basically, about Osama bin Laden, I'm kind of with you. If they did it, cool. I just want to see pictures. And the thing, when they didn't want to release the pictures, they said it was, too graphic or anything else. And I mean, really, watch primetime television. You see 10 times worse things than that.
Yeah, I watch The Walking Dead. I'll see like a child zombie. It's like the most disgusting thing I've ever seen. And yet that's okay. But I want to see evidence, and somehow I'm not a grown up enough to see it. Yeah, you're totally spot on.
Yeah, and honestly, man, if they really wanted to fight the war on terror correctly to win it, they'd pull everybody out of every base in the world and line up the tanks tread to tread on our borders.
Yeah.
They'd stop frisking grannies and children, and they would do exactly what Israel does, and they would actually racially profile, because that's what we have to do. I mean, if it's terrorists, terrorists from the Middle East look a certain way. And I'm not racist. I'm not saying they're all terrorists, but they look a certain way.
I know. Tim McVeigh might pop a hole in your racial profiling theory there. Ted Kaczynski might pop a hole in that. I agree with you on defending our own country, getting out of the bases. I don't think racial profiling helps anything. I think that's an impingement on liberty, moving from probable cause to reasonable suspicion is a bad, bad move in the wrong direction.
Yeah,
but
in Vietnam, if there was a white guy that walked out of the jungle and our guys saw him, they probably wouldn't instantly shoot him. But if they saw a Viet Cong with the hat and everything else, I don't know, man. That's just basically, if a black guy or a white guy, say, robs a bank that has the same clothes as 3 other dudes, a Mexican walked by with the same clothes, they're not going to look at him. The black guy walks by with the same clothes, they're not going to look at him. The white guy, since a white guy robbed the bank with that description of clothing, they're going to stop him just because he's white.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I also think all the Japanese interred during World War II would probably have a bone to pick with your
No, that was BS. Trust me. I'm totally not for that. I'm not a racist, man, and I'm not trying to propagate any kind of, racism or anything like that. I'm just saying, if we want to fight the war to actually win it and not just make money off of it, we would do it a completely different way.
I agree with you there. I think that war profiteering, I think that a lot of what we get is BS. And that's the point. Anyway, anything else in closing, John, before I get back to Connor?
No, man, that's it, man. Thanks. I
appreciate it, buddy. Don't be a stranger.
Thanks, John.
All right,
Connor. So, where do we go from here? I mean, my worldview says that 9/11 was a very important data point in the history of it was the beginning of the true demise. I mean, the point of no return.
Right.
At that point, the United States is toast.
Right.
I mean, I don't see us ever pulling out of this in this incarnation. I don't see any way of backtracking or that kind
of thing. Yeah, no, and I generally agree. In fact, earlier in the show, you were talking about the PNAC document, the blueprint that they were calling for a new Pearl Harbor, right, to kind of galvanize the nationalism, the militarism. I think that's essentially what the military needs. Not any type of violent attack or anything like that, but there needs to be some event. I frankly think that event is some sort of economic bankrupt collapse, some sort of collapse of the dollar, some systemic change that essentially forces us to rethink our foreign policy. This is the tune, of course, that Ron Paul's been singing. We can't afford the foreign policy. Let's bring the troops home. Let's try and avoid this collapse.
And all the troops are donating to him from the bottom. And then
right.
guys like General Mullen at the top are like, look, the biggest threat to national security ain't Al-Qaeda, Iran, or China. It's our national debt.
Right. And that's exactly right. And so I think that there's so, in fact, you know, was it earlier on your show or someone else I was listening to, I think maybe earlier today, it was actually Tom Woods I was listening to today. He made the point that, you know, when these funding projects come through the Pentagon, they spread it out across as many congressional districts as they can so that these emotional arguments can be used to justify the perpetuity. Even when you have stuff like back from the you know, Cold War era, these programs are still running because it's about jobs now. And I think we've become so entrenched, so intertwined with all the emotional rhetoric that there simply is not going to be any one candidate, any one politician, any bill, any law that's going to be passed that's going to substantively change and reduce the military-industrial complex. I think it's going to have to take a systemic change in the order of magnitude of a, you know, economic collapse, dollar collapse, default on the debt, what have you, to even be able to begin to address. I mean, you look at empires throughout history, right? You look at Rome, you look at the British Empire, you look at the Ottoman Empire, and their hand had to be forced in the end. There had to be some sort of collapse, some sort of systemic, significant change in order for things to change, even though you had people who were dissenting within the ranks of government and people who were contrasting the policy of the day and saying, hey, guys, let's scale this back. They weren't listened to because it becomes about these emotional arguments. That is my fear with 9/11 when you have people saying, we will never forget and remember the victims, is that if we leave the arguments at just a superficial emotional level, we are, in fact, condoning and justifying the very thing that these people claim to be fighting against, and that's tyranny and evil and, you know, big government and the like. It's by discarding these emotional arguments, not that they shouldn't be made. Again, as I said at the beginning, we should honor the victims, remember them, and you know, memorialize them where appropriate. But by discarding that and looking at the underlying policies, just for example, Mayor Bloomberg recently made the statement, I have my own army in the New York Police Department, which is the seventh largest army in the world.
Which, by the way, has opened up a branch in Israel. I mean, go figure with that.
And so here you have a city mayor who has armies bigger than, you know, empires and you know, domains throughout the entire world. And then he's just a city mayor. And he has control over this army that's just been, or this, you know, police department that's been completely militarized. The Pentagon throws hundreds of millions, if not tens of billions of dollars at specific cities. They've now appropriated in the past decade $635 billion just for domestic, quote-unquote, homeland security. I think this is why we need to discard the emotional arguments. This stuff is being done in our name, under the radar in many cases. You've now got all these drones that are being deployed throughout the country. To the extent that we keep the conversation at a superficial emotional level, this stuff is going to continue. I think we need to have frank, open, and honest discussion about the evil that has been perpetrated in our name in the decades since 9/11, because it is evil. It is taxing us to fund the early death of innocent people throughout the world. That makes absolutely no sense to me.
Yeah, it's crazy times in which we live.
Well, let me end with this, Jake. I know we're hitting up against the break. I was reminded earlier today of the magnificent speech by Dwight D. Eisenhower, his farewell address, right? Five-star general. And he had been in the halls of government at the highest echelons. He had seen what the military-industrial complex was trying to do. There's a great documentary. I'm trying to remember the name of it. It's called Why We Fight. If anyone hasn't seen that, go Google it. You can find the whole thing online, Why We Fight. And it's basically based around this speech by Eisenhower. But there's so many compelling things in that speech. For example, this one quote that he says, every gun that is made, every warship launched, every rocket fired signifies in the final sense a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, those who are cold and are not clothed. This world in arms is not spending money alone. It is spending the sweat of its laborers, the genius of its scientists, the hopes of its children. And he goes on to basically say what the true cost of war is. Now, that was, of course, decades ago, but you look at just the trillions of dollars. We're at about $11 or $12 trillion that have been spent on these wars in the past decade. This is something that we need to correct.
Yeah, you're right, man. I appreciate it. Great segment, Connor. Every Tuesday here, 2:30, the Boyack Review. Guys, tomorrow, Mental Self-Defense Radio will be back talking about weaponized finance, also talking a little bit about endonomics and more. Come on back tomorrow, guys. Check you then. K-Talk, boys. See you.